really don't know how to act.
I don't either. Do some shoulder shrugs.
Just kidding. What do they say? What do they say these days?
Decided to wear a turtleneck. I was doing my hair. And Mads and I just did headshots. And her voice is in my head because I was like wearing a claw clip. Because I wear a claw clip a lot.
Yeah.
And I like looked at the photos because that's what we were doing. We were taking photos, looking at them to make sure we got the shot. We got what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ugh. And Madison goes, I don't know why you ran your hair up. You don't like your face right now.
That's and so I was
like,
honest.
You are so right. I don't like my face right now.
You don't like your face right now.
I don't. You know, I like my face. It's just a little rounder. And what's so funny is I was going back and I was listening to like the episodes.
Were you?
Not all. I mean, I was skipping. Yeah, yeah.
Just for fun? You missed it?
I just wanted to refresh myself on like, who am I? Where were we?
Where did we leave off?
Yes.
I have no idea, actually.
Right. And I discovered, well, I said in one of the episodes that like, I like the way I look. I'm not worried about how much weight I've gained. I'm a powerful woman. Well,
the tables have turned.
Timetables have turned. We're a little bit less body positive. We're working on it. We are appreciative. We don't step on the scale.
Oh,
we don't
no.
count cows. We just sometimes. Hey, Eric recently took Madison's phone. He caught us slipping.
Oh, whoa. Oh,
he caught us kids slipping.
Kids with phones. Humbling.
I was like, do I have a neck anymore? Hey.
Well, you definitely don't in this turtleneck. So.
No, so
I'm rocking the no neck.
We are rocking the no neck. I do have a few things. You know, obviously show and tell, new. I don't even know if we can call, like, we've been fucking around with having seasons, but it's just been seasons of change here. You know, like we had season one, season two. We have a season three?
I think
is this season four?
I think we started season three.
And is this season three continued?
Whatever you want to call it. I would call this like post-traumatic
stress.
Wait, that's so funny. Post-traumatic stress. Yes.
Yeah. So I decided I we're upstairs. We're in my attic-y space. It's kind of finished. And I did no measuring, obviously. There was no even girl math involved. I saw on the website I was going to make there's a sign in here. Okay. You know, nice canvas sign, okay? And I was like, oh, just get the medium size. And then I'm like getting the space ready and I was like, oh, I need to go through and like measure. Like, what did I order?
What is this? Do you even know?
This is the sign I bought.
Okay.
For this space where these neon signs
are now.
Is this
a sheet? This is a full-on sheet, bed sheet. Oh my god. Okay, this is large. Oh my gosh.
I got a four foot by 5 foot sign.
It's so cute.
So it can be used as like a blanket.
It is, yeah, it could be our blanket.
If you need a blanket. There's that.
Wow. This is so cute though.
It is cute. I thought, you know, Jess likes a little more of a neutral vibe.
I do, yeah.
But that was not going to fit here.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But it's so cute and huge. And you know what?
Welcome back, everybody.
Oh, I love it. Welcome back, bitches.
We are here.
We are. We're here. We're up in the attic. New change of scenery, change of space. I don't know where else we were going to do it. My basement, maybe.
Yeah, your basement, maybe. But then it's like, you're going to have a baby soon. We're like, we don't know
if
what
you don't
know,
now you know. Yeah, so there's the thing, too. I don't know who follows me on Instagram, knows me personally, any of the listeners. If anyone's even listening to this episode, does anyone still care?
Right.
Who knows? But in a strange turn of events, I'm pregnant again.
We'll backtrack on why that's a big deal, but
yeah,
you're pregnant right now.
Yeah, so it'll be in November. I'll be pregnant for a year. and we'll break down the math in that. But
you're 19 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably 20 weeks by the time this comes out.
Yeah. And I could talk, go into that, but or we can save it. But I'm an anxious mess to sum it up. That's really going to do. I'm so happy to be pregnant and to have a healthy baby growing inside me. But boy, am I fucking scared.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. I just talked with Mary about it the other day. She's like, you know, it's you're never too good for Zoloft. And I said, you're right. You're right. And I appreciated that very much. She was just like, you know, anxiety is common in pregnancy, obviously, given your circumstances for you as well. But if it gets too much, you know, always know that there's that. And I said, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I said, I think if it worsens or stays the same, I could talk to my doctor about it. But
honestly,
I thought that was so cool.
I credit so much of my sanity to just staying on meds and keeping on. Okay.
Yeah.
People asked a lot about postpartum depression. I've been dodging it left and right. Okay. I have not gotten down bad. And I know sometimes being on meds doesn't change things for some people, but I've been rolling with it.
Good.
You know? I stayed on my meds. Got back on my stimulants.
Yeah, you're on meth.
How are people mothering without little amphetamines?
Okay? I don't know. I'm jealous of that.
Hey, just get a chronic disability.
Okay, I'll catch one. I'll catch one after I deliver this baby.
Catch one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was finally just like, you know what? Enough is enough. I got to get on the stimulants because I cannot do it
anymore. Yeah, I think when you were talking about juggling work or getting back on like a regimented work schedule, you were like, I can't. Yeah, and that's when you knew. I think that you learned how to function, or you know, the morning coffee could only hold you over for so long. Yes. But now the schedule's changed, so
yes. Okay, and the second treat,
you have more, we dropped more surprises.
We dropped it. Oh, this is very crinkly. Far.
More gifts. Is that your love language?
Oh. A red beanie for the baby.
Wait. I almost wore the red beanie today.
I was hoping so much that you would.
I was so close, but I went with this bullshit.
I love it. You're all put together for the baby.
Look, it's a red beanie. If you don't know, I wear the red beanie quite a bit. I love it.
I know. I just couldn't resist it.
Thanks, Rach.
I had to. I searched.
It's so cute. I can't wait. I've bought lots of clothes. I've gone. Oh my God. Can I smell it?
Yeah, go please. For it. It's Yingling, not the best, most biggest smell.
Consider me sober. 1 year.
You've been sober for so long.
Give me my chip, my token, whatever. Give me it. I had 2 months of freedom.
That's how Madison knew Jess was pregnant immediately.
Oh, yeah. We shot a wedding together.
That's what I told her. Because she looked at you sideways.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I know I can't get away with
not drinking at a wedding.
No. I'm always going to have myself a little drinkity at a wedding, and I'm not going to get drunk, but I just need something for the second half of the night to pick me up. And Mads knows this, and I knew that's when I was going to tell her that I was like, I can't have a drink because I'm pregnant. So,
and let me tell you, she kept that a secret from me until you told me.
Good for her.
I mean, unheard.
You could never say that.
If I knew something was a secret, I would. It's kind of like the wife rule. It's like you tell someone something, they're going to, you know, there are certain people that you know.
Yeah.
You got to disclose. Hey, don't tell anyone. Don't tell Madison.
Yeah. I didn't really care.
But now the girl's got her own life, you know?
Yeah.
When we catch up, we catch up. It's bizarre.
Yeah. The codependency no more. Really.
I mean, really. It's like the book just hit us in the face.
Right.
But really, it was just like she got a house and a partner and like stability.
Which is good.
Which is so good. But it's also bizarre and weird.
Yeah.
But
it's different. The winds of change.
Welcome back. It feels like it's been a million years and also feels not that like it's been that long. But it really has been. So if you're listening, thanks for hanging in. Thanks for hanging on with us.
Welcome back.
It's good Welcome to see you, back. Jess. It's good Welcome to see you with back. A little microphone in front of your face.
Thanks. Yeah.
Don't know if you have some Queenie hair. This has been in the basement in her domain.
I didn't see her when I came in today. Mm.
She's around. Always and lurking Herschel. At Queenie. Yeah.
I didn't see him either.
They're lurking.
They're lurking. Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a minute. I do feel like it's been a really long time.
Yeah.
You said like it doesn't feel like much time has passed, but it does. There's so much that happened and so like you have a baby.
I do. Yeah. An 8-month-old baby.
Like 8 months.
Yeah. It's been 7 months. So Josh and I recorded when she was a month old.
And wow. So
it's been 7 months since we dropped an episode of the podcast.
Was that the last episode?
Yes.
That was posted. Got it. Wow.
And what I think is like crazy about that episode. Why did I get beer? I always burp. You guys get it.
You get it.
As I say in that episode, I give this like disclosure about the fact that, you know, we're not going to be doing any more episodes and like we're taking like a permanent, you know, hiatus. A long break, I say. A long break mm-hmm. for the podcast. And I say that Jess is going through the hardest thing any human can go through. And I don't even know about Florence yet. I have no knowledge that Florence had any abnormalities or you've had any problems with your pregnancy.
Oh my God.
All I knew at that point was that your dad went into hospice.
Wow. And he ended up not going to hospice, but
yes,
but was on the last leg.
Yeah. Things were constantly kind of moving around at that time.
That's insane. Yeah. That's insane. So you didn't even know that it could
get harder or worse.
Yeah.
Yes.
For better and worse. And it got and worse.
Worse. How could it get any worse?
I was at the threshold of hell. I'll tell you that.
It was so hard to watch.
Harrowing. Really? Really? Yeah. It was rough, and we'll probably get into it, I assume, in more detail.
Yeah, the point of this whole game. Yeah.
And catch people up. But yeah, I'm just gonna little forewarn. I have a little dark humor about it. Sometimes that'll spew out. So
that's all right.
Yeah, that'll happen.
That'll happen.
It's so weird. We talked about doing this episode so many times about either catching up or me telling my story or, you know, any of that. And it all feels very different at different times of my life. It's going to. The story is going to change as life progresses.
As your perspective changes.
Yeah, 100%. So it's so weird to be at this point. You know, I think we kept saying like, okay, we should do it now. Mm-hmm. And we would push it back.
Because you wanted it at first. You wanted it to feel
like it
fresh.
Felt. Yeah.
But not raw. Like you wanted it to feel like, okay, I still have current emotions about this, mm-hmm. but you didn't want it to be.
But
I couldn't be too close to it either.
It was like, I'm just going, if I open up about it, I will just sob the entire episode.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, what about that sweet spot that there was enough time that I mm-hmm. still feel like I know the details? And then that just like didn't work out, or I was actually just found out I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the story kind of got.
Yeah. There was literally, I think, like 1 or 2 weeks in June before you knew you were pregnant. But it had been a long enough time since like losing Florence and your dad.
Yeah. So that.
But we just didn't. We didn't do it then.
Yeah.
And you weren't like, hey, now's the time. You weren't checking in about it.
Being pregnant changed the story for me.
Yeah.
Would change the story for me a bit. So I was like, I'm also need to process being pregnant too and be able to feel safe in that first, you know? And then I was like, you know, I would love to get past a certain point to be able to announce it on mm-hmm. the pod. So then here we are, 19 weeks. So, yay.
Good job.
I have my anatomy scan on Monday. I'm excited.
And it's going to be good.
Yeah, I'm going to see a little baby. It's going
to
be.
It's so fun to see them.
Yeah.
They're tiny and then they exist.
Yeah, that's like, weird.
Like, what?
It's also like you don't know. I think before this time, you just kind of hope that everything's going well and like this feels made up until mm-hmm. you can like feel them and then you're like, oh, that's actually happening inside of me.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I'm sure many mothers can relate, but
yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel real. And I think like when you open up about that, like Jerry said to me, because I mean, this was when Elsie was like a couple months old, and I was like, this just like, does it ever like start feeling real? Like, and she's like, there's still some days that I can't believe I have two kids, and they're like full grown, like human boys.
Yeah, I believe it. I just think because pregnancy and childbirth like defies all logic. It doesn't make any sense that you can grow a human inside of you and push it out your vag. Like, what is that?
But what's more crazy is the first year of life. Like, someone asked me, like, what's the biggest surprise? People always say the first year's insane. No, Elsie was a potato. She couldn't move. She was just like, and now she's pulling herself up. She's crawling like crazy. No teeth yet. That's a bit weird. But other than
a bit of a concern at this point. Okay. But
no, Google says if it's been a year, then it's a concern. Okay, don't worry. I looked. I literally Googled what if my baby doesn't have teeth, and there was nothing that came up.
So that can't happen.
So I'm assuming, yeah, babies being born without.
You were probably looking up like dentures for babies.
Hey, I was so close. I was so close. I've been like holding off on Googling it for a whole month.
Oh, good for you.
But then I was finally like, what if she really doesn't grow teeth?
Dude, I applaud people who don't Google. It's not good for anybody.
No, I
know in motherhood, I don't think it's not avoidable. You can't avoid it. Right? I mean, completely. I think there's stuff you can easily gain access to.
Something
knowledge
that,
about things.
Like I've done. But there's a lot of opinions. My first line of defense is asking other moms.
Love it.
Because Google is a wild place, okay? Lord above, is it?
I wish we didn't have it in motherhood. Like
I had to get off of TikTok. I was literally just like,
people did it. People did parenthood without Google.
Yes, and so I've adopted what I've called the '90s mom mentality. Okay, we ask the people in our inner circle. We ask our doctors. We ask our mothers. And if I'm not satisfied with an answer there, then I'll reach out to the 21st century. Mm. But. In reality, okay, I can't be having this. I can't be having all the information thrown at me 100 different ways my child is going to die, hurt themselves, you know, diagnoses that she might have. Like, I just can't. I'm just going to be living in the present with my child because all of the tech is so insane. Don't get me wrong. The Duna stroller, that tech I'll eat up all day.
You'll die on
I'll that die hill. On the Duna, okay? I'll die for the Duna.
My issue with the Duna is that your baby's on the floor. Your baby's so low in the stroller, I feel.
Well, you don't use it. So I don't use it as a stroller. It's not like what I take her around the block in. But
if you need to in a pinch.
But when
you
I go into the gym, I just zoom her in.
Yeah, but like baby's riding low.
Kinda, but it's like I don't have to hulk her up.
I get the practicality.
Yeah,
it's way good. I know.
And I'm also not as tall as you, so like I'm not like leaning over. I'm not like,
yeah, I saw one today, and I think the girl mother was about my height, so I was like, oh, that baby looks like she's riding low. And I said, that is why the Duna stroller looks weird to me.
Okay. No, I just think it's just so much work. Like, for doctor's appointments, for everything, it's just, like,
probably super easy, yeah.
Yeah, like.
It's super practical.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine this season without it. But granted, if I didn't have it, I would have a different perspective on it.
Right.
It's one of those things.
100%.
Like, I think it was worth it for us. Love but it. Now we do have to find a new car seat situation because she's got 10 more pounds in it. But who knows how fast she's going to pack that on. Big deal. I mean, not really. She's 50th percentile, but she's big in spirit.
Big in spirit.
Big in spirit.
She's
okay.
Cute. She's so cute.
She is. She loves clapping. She's a happy girl.
She's a happy girl.
Okay, but Jess, back to you, okay? So we're going to kind of roll the tape back a bit.
I am so not emotionally prepared.
Were you ever going to be?
No. And I also like didn't know coming into this episode that we were actually doing this. So maybe that's like helpful.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be like.
Yeah. It's not like I could forget either. So.
But I think just giving our, you know, listeners a base level of like what the fuck you went through.
Yeah. If for those nosy people out there, here you go. I'm nosy as fuck when I hear of tragedy.
Please get in the DMs about your guesses for what was happening. Because that's what I want to know. Like, what did people think was happening? Because you gave very little crumbs.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Please tell me what you guys thought was going on.
Really?
We ruled out divorce.
Yeah, we did have to do that after a couple months.
Yeah.
We were like, okay.
People could think it is that, you know? But I do want to know what people thought. I'm curious.
I am very curious about what could have been happening. Okay.
In people's minds about my life.
So it's been a year. So bring us back to what happened a year ago. What was the family emergency?
Yeah. So the family emergency, which is what we refer to it as.
Yes.
The family emergency was my dad was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He was on a trip with his wife at the time. And they were cruising around going all over on the west side. He was in Yellowstone at the time. And the way he used to describe the story, I've heard the story told by him a million times. And I million is like right on the money. I've heard it so many times. So I'm going to try to phrase
every different doctor, every different.
And it's crazy how he would say it the exact same every single time. So I'm going to try to refrain or maybe put in some things that how he described it because it's funny. But he was jaundiced, so he was yellow as mustard is how he said it. And he went to a small little hospital up where he was, and they found a mass on his pancreas and said, hey, hate to tell you this, but you have a huge mass on your pancreas. Where are you from? He said, Cleveland. The doctor said, hey, get to Cleveland Clinic. They're the best. You got to head home now. So he did. He drove all the way home from Yellowstone in a few days. He says the drive was so easy. It was good. And he was like in really good spirits. I'll never forget that phone call. Hey, you know, I'm jaundiced. You know, he's telling us this, but I'm fine. You know, everything's good. And I went to the doctor. They said it's best if I go be seen right now back in Cleveland. And he was just like so chipper about it. You know, it was so weird. And at the time, he knew, him and his wife knew that it was cancer, but we did not. And that was not something he was ready to disclose at the time, I guess. Mm-hmm. So he gets home, goes right to the Cleveland Clinic. And yeah, that's when we got the news. It was stage 4, inoperable, and had metastasized to the liver at that time. So yeah, that news was fucking earth shattering. Some things you never forget about loved ones getting diagnosed with cancer. And Rach, I know you have some experience with that too. Just getting that news and, you know, with that person too. And I was really specific about not being at that appointment because I didn't want to hear that same news with my dad. But I was there for it. And it was as shitty as I thought it was going to be. Yeah. For sure. And we all just tugged and cried, and we had known it was cancer, but not at what stage, you know? So, okay. So yeah, that was the stage 4, and that there was nothing we could do but chemo. And my dad decided to move forward with chemo, but that was all in September when that went
end
down.
End of September, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we recorded it like end of September, maybe like, you know, I think the episode came out the last weekend in September.
Yeah.
And it was like at that week that like all of it was happening.
Yeah. Because it was quick when he came home, went right to the hospital. And, you know, he was there for a few days because they had to put a stent in to, you know.
Administer the chemo.
No, that was later. It was to block. There was some valve. Oh, my sisters are going to listen to this and be like, you should know this, but I don't. Hey, the details.
Block it out.
I was. A lot of the medical jargon, too, I'm like not super good at. But something had to be put in so that would clear up his jaundice.
Okay.
So there was a stent put in that helped with that. And it did. And it cleared that up. So he was in the hospital for a couple days for that. And then the news.
And I remember you saying that, like, your dad physically had changed kind of over the summer, right?
Yes.
And he, like, drastically, like, lost some weight.
Yeah. Right before their trip, it was my birthday, which is August 30th. So right before they left, I had dinner with my dad, and he was super skinny. And my dad has fluctuated weight his entire life. He will get big, take diet and exercise really seriously, you know, and lose a bunch of weight. He's done it his entire life. Probably super unhealthy. He was pre-diabetic as well. So, but never, you know, was reliant on insulin or ever got to that point. But yeah, he was really, really skinny. And it, I don't know, at the time I was like, whoa, you know, like, wow, you really dropped a lot of weight. But he has done that in the past. So I didn't like really see either, because he's still wearing like his baggier clothes too. Mm-hmm. So I was like, it's definitely noticeable. But then in the hospital, he was jaundiced and he was in a gown. And that was just jarring for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, that was like, holy shit. Like, he looks weaker, you know?
Yeah.
And he had dropped so much weight. He could have even lost even more too during, you know, his trip for like, he was gone for 3 weeks or so mm-hmm. at the time. So, yeah, it was, that was hard to see. I mean, watching your dad slowly decline and wither away was really hard too. He's like the strongest man, you know, in my life, mm-hmm. in my eyes. So it's like when you see that strong man, you know, become weak, it sucks. It's really hard.
And because I think it was so overnight almost, like, for you to not only like accept, okay, my dad has stage 4 cancer, but also like he is sick. Like, because like you hear people get cancer, people with breast cancer, like, and they don't look different until they start treatment.
Right.
But then it was like the sobering moment where you're like, oh no, this thing is like, this thing is killing him right now.
Yeah. And has been.
And has
for
been.
For maybe a year or so is kind of what the doctor said. Like, you probably had it last Christmas.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And like, obviously grew over time and just went unnoticed. And pancreatic cancer is very much like
it
that.
It does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a silent killer. And mostly not caught until stage 4. But yeah, that was. And then if you think about that, it's 6 months later and he passed. So it was very much, he looked different. He was weak. He jumped right into chemo. And then that changed things completely, as chemo does. He was on 2 regimens. One, the first one didn't work. And then the second one just absolutely ruined him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, and then that's it. He becomes too weak to walk after a few months, and then required like full care from all of us. So, and then as it progresses, obviously he gets hospitalized and then put into a rehab center. And then from there, that was it. So it was very quick.
Yeah.
And that was obviously shitty, but so quick that it's like, thinking back on it was like, holy shit, 6 months was so fast. The decline was unbelievable.
Yeah. And I know this question probably could be answered differently by like you and Kristen and Britt, your dad, you know, but when did like you know and fully grasp that like he was going to die?
Way too late.
Okay.
It's interesting because my sisters and I are the ones who, you know, really went through it together, and we all have such a different perspective and experience through this. And it's so typical of our birth order. Truly, like, Kristen was really pushing everybody to know the prognosis.
Yeah.
My dad didn't want to know.
Like, he didn't want his time. Like, he didn't want to know how many months he had, right?
No, he did not. He never asked. And that was hard too, but I didn't either. And there was a part of me in denial of that, or like, when my dad knows, he'll tell me, or, you know, something like that. I just couldn't do the research on my own. I didn't want to. Yeah, it's that's really weird thinking back on how stubborn I was about not wanting to know. Like I would like, I'll pick up the signs when it's happening. But even then I'm in it and I couldn't, you know. So even until his last breaths, that's really sad how that happened. But I don't know how low blood pressure can get before someone passes away. But that was all happening. And my sister had to tell me, oh, it's happening right now. And I'm when I tell you I didn't believe it until the last second, I'm saying like it was happening for probably about an hour right in front of me. And my sister had to tell me, and she always says, the look on your face haunts me at night when I think about me telling you that because of
Britt
or Kristen. Kristen, yeah. Like, that's something I'll never forget. It's like what your face looked like when I told you that, you know, like dad's going to die. Like, I couldn't read the room. I was in such denial, you know? So, but yeah, it was when the doctor told us, which was probably about, I think maybe a month or two. I don't even know. Time was so weird back then, but
it was February sometime, right?
Yeah, where the doctor was like, your chemo is not working at all. And this is it. Stopping chemo and we're getting you comfortable. And so like we were told that at the same time as my dad was hearing that at the same time.
Yeah.
And again, I'm in the room where I didn't want to hear that at the same time as my dad. So it was like, looking back, I'm grateful, you know, that I was there for it, you know, so that I could be there for him. But, you know, it was like this weird selfish part of me that I just didn't want to be a part. I didn't want to be a part of any of my memories. It was like very clear about that with myself, being like, I don't want that to have something I have to look back on and get sad about. I want to clear of that. And I was part of it. But yeah looking back, it's
where you needed to be.
Yeah,
but it was not where you wanted to be.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to put it. It was where I needed to be. But
and like, I'll kind of say, like, as your friend, like, my perspective on a lot of the stuff and just remembering things that you might not or, but like, your big thing was like not being ready for your perspective on your dad and for your dad's role and his normal like role to change.
Yes.
So like you wanted news to come from your dad because that's where news came from.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted, and I think like a big reason why like you didn't accept that he was dying. Like you knew logically that's happening, but you didn't like.
I didn't prepare. No, not at all.
Because your dad didn't. Like that was the hardest thing for you was like he's not ready or acknowledging that this is actually going to happen.
It's funny to have hindsight on this.
Yeah.
Because at the end of his life, I was starting to get frustrated that he wasn't accepting it. Because at that point, I was.
Yeah.
In a, you know, somewhat. If whatever that feels or looks like. Honestly, who knows? How could you ever accept or get to a point of acceptance that one of your parents is going to die? But he never, even up till the end, you know, really never accepted it. He was working up until the end. He was ordering magazine subscriptions for himself for a year. It was really hard to witness all that. And it was really frustrating to just want to spend this time with him and maybe reminisce a bit. And we would tell him like, you know, let's talk on old stories, but he just like, his brain doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And that's so my dad. And it makes a lot of sense, but it was still really difficult. Like,
do you feel like it normally takes him a long time to like make a decision?
Yeah. Like, he's like, emotionally processing things is late for sure. So being this one of the most emotional experiences, being death, I don't know how anybody grasps that. I think about that actually quite a bit. How do you come to terms with your own death? Do some people do it better than others? I think so, you know, but this guy was never an acceptance of his own death, you know, even up until I think the day before my mom was talking to him and he just would say like, I just don't know why God wants to take me now, like why he wants to take me too soon. You know, there's that whole religious aspect, which you think would be freeing or
most time as it is.
Yeah. And it really wasn't. He was still like in that angry phase about his death and with God. And so
I think, Jess, honestly, like from hearing I think that's the hardest thing for me, to know that, like, he wasn't ready to go and you guys all knew it.
Mm-hmm.
That is bad. That, to me, that yes. is, like, I don't have any other words. Like, I wish I had more, but, like, that is bad.
Yeah, that's...
That is a bad thing.
It feels bad. Because, you know, we're so scared. I'm not ready. The words, I'm not ready, is what I was saying as my dad, after Kristen told me, you know, this is it, Jess. And I just sobbed and I said, I'm not ready. And to know that, you know, my dad, who we look... for advice, for guidance, your parent, and he was the pillar of all of that for me, is not ready. He's never reassuring to us, like, you guys are going to be fine. Or, you know, the death talk that, you know, grandparents have, you know, or anybody.
That my dad tells me, like, every Wednesday at lunch.
Oh, God.
Ready to go, babe.
Yeah. Like, I lived a good life speech, you know, like, I did what I needed to do and I'm fine. You guys are going to be just fine. You know, like, that type of, no.
That is, I think, a very interesting part of the plot for you.
Yeah.
Because that is such a rare take, I feel, like,
yeah,
for a parent to be open about it. I think, I don't know, it made him so much more human in those moments.
Yeah.
Of, like, not just saying, like, what the dad should say.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, I think maybe at the end, like, your dad felt the freedom to just be human.
Yeah.
And although that kind of put a bit of a burden on you guys, like,
yeah,
he was doing things imperfectly.
Yes.
At yes. the end there.
Yes. Very much so.
Very much.
That's the best way to put it. He really did to not get into some of a lot of the other stuff. But it was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was difficult for all of us to witness that and to feel helpless in that. Yeah, we just wanted him to be comfortable and get to a point of acceptance. But like I said, like, how do you, you know, I just, at what point and up until the end, he never got to it, you know, and ended up dying unexpectedly from sepsis. So he got an infection really bad in the middle of the night and then rushed to the ER.
Right.
And so that whole hospice thing where, you know, they can actually aid that and facilitate that for, you know, their patients. That was, I was actually looking forward to that because I'm like, maybe we can have, you know, that conversation. And I don't know if I was actually ever ready for that, but something, whatever my dad's version of that. And about my dad too, like, that all of this is very Jim Cardellone of him too, to like not reach that point of, you know, sharing that moment or just keeping stuff in, even though I felt like there was a lot he wanted to say because he just is too stubborn. I don't know. But
I think, like, your dad shocked you in moments. Like, thinking back to your wedding, you didn't have us mic your dad up because you thought he was just going to say
a prayer.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Yeah, and I thought he was doing the prayer or something.
And we were dum-dums and believed it. Now, it's the lesson that I learned very early on, don't fucking listen to people because
just mic them. I mean,
just mic them up.
Yeah,
just mic them up because he gave a 5-minute long speech, probably, and was working the crowd. But like, you weren't expecting it,
no,
at all.
Given my reaction, I think sobbing.
Right, you were just, I don't know. You're always ready for your dad to just do your dad when the time came.
Yeah.
Like, just show up in whatever way he was going to. And sometimes that was big and emotional, and other times it was
underwhelming. Yeah. And I loved either version, but and also the thing we talk about now in hindsight, my sisters and my mom and I, about cancer and behavior and the brain and, like, what was my dad and what wasn't my dad at that point.
Yes.
So some of that stuff too, about his decision making and, you know, like, ordering the subscriptions. And
my uncle went through the same thing. He, you know, passed in the summer and had, like, terminal stomach cancer, and, you know, same deal. the man was not accepting he was dying, not at all, not to the end, like, just, but, like, made bizarre choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, made someone else the executor of his will that lived in Alabama, not his brother or his sister who live here. Like, it was just, like, what parts are you in your right mind and yeah. not? And I do feel like, you know, from seeing, like, your dad go through, like, chemo, you know, my uncle and Madison had, you know, someone else significant to her go through it. And I kept asking myself the question, like, are doctors honest about how much chemo can take you away from your family?
No.
Like, I'm talking about
pretty strongly about
all these three men were stage four diagnoses, terminal, like, this is going to get you in the end.
I also don't feel like there were a few appointments I weren't there for in between there, but, like, was there a discussion of, like, if you do chemo, this is how long? Well, you know. Actually, no, because he didn't want to know.
He didn't want to know.
Yeah. So I'm like, feel like I love to think about, like, did chemo buy him time?
Yeah.
Or did it speed things up? Because he was so far gone.
Yeah.
And then we even upped his chemo for what? Like, was that buying us time?
Right.
Like, I just want to know, like, what was that was going to knock him out completely? And it did. He couldn't walk. Yeah. And he was in denial about that.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Yeah. That was, I mean, physically carrying my dad while I was pregnant is a memory I'll never forget. Yeah. Like, I was so scared. There were already complications in my pregnancy, and my dad is just, like, bearing all this weight on me, and I can't vocalize. Like, it was just like, yeah. I was in such a tough spot, but I felt so uncomfortable. Or felt so helpless too, that, like, I couldn't help him with that. But feeling like I need to, like, protect my baby all at once, it was just like a whole complicated,
yeah,
emotional.
Yeah. Bleh. Like, what's the priority and what's the.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. And I think that my dad, like, losing the ability to walk was one of the harder parts of the whole thing.
That would be.
Yeah.
That would be. Because your dad was just, like, the able-bodied worker.
The lumberjack. I guess, like, if you could, I mean, just big guy, loved to work, always outside, knew everything, so smart, you know, worked on everything outside, cars, knew everything. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, he just is that epitome of a hardworking guy. And then that's what he likes to do, is to move around and tinker around and fuck with things. And when he's just bedridden, that's when we were at the point where we're like, okay, this is not the life for Jim Cardelloni.
No.
He, as an engineer, made his life work around him with tables and things and weird contraptions that he told us, walked us through to, you know, like, of his bedside. He was
MacGyvering?
Oh, till the end. Absolutely. Lights and different things, like, all this stuff. And laptops and dude was operating a MacBook at the end there. He hated it. I know, he's like a Windows guy through and through. But all we had was, like, Brit's old MacBook, so that, I mean, he was working, he was emailing, he was finishing up affairs. And
oh my god,
yeah, that's the thing too about the end of his life, which we can't go too much into, but, like, there was a lot of stress and things happening about him tying loose ends.
Well, guys, in typical motherfucking Rachel fashion, I apparently didn't press record on the camera, so sorry to the YouTube commune, as usual. You are underserved and underappreciated.
They know. We're working out the kinks, okay?
So this is the large bed sheet, if we wanted a good example of how large this is, of the sign.
Because you missed that before.
And there's the baby beanie. The red baby beanie. We are currently recording.
Nervously playing with during this whole episode.
Good. Good.
It's my sensory toy.
Good. Okay.
My fidget.
So, the trauma was multifaceted, as we know. But
as we don't know yet.
But tell me about getting pregnant with Florence and that timeline.
Yeah. So I got pregnant in November with Florence, and we announced to our family on Christmas. That is a sad video of my dad finding out that I'm pregnant, that I cherish, that I love, that I have. But yeah, we told our family, and then at 12 weeks, we found out that she had a increased nuchal fold. Not many people know this thing or that it gets measured, because if it's normal, there is no concern for your baby. Mm-hmm. But it is a measurement that they usually typically take at 12 weeks. And Florence's was five millimeters, which is large.
And what is it an indicator of? Just like a genetic abnormality?
Yep. Typically associated with Down syndrome. Or they also said cardiac issues, which is also associated with Down syndrome as well. Our doctor at the time, we were at university hospitals, and it was just not really communicated. We weren't really educated on it. You know, she kind of was like, you know, we don't really know anything yet, which is true. You know, the things she was saying, she wasn't trying to scare us, but I think knowing now of who I am and how I am in pregnancy, like, just give me all the facts. Just give me it straight up. That's how I appreciate it. Like, do not sugarcoat anything. If this is means anything, please let me know what those things are.
Okay.
So we went home and Googled, which is the worst thing we could have done. And it's just Down syndrome city. Truly Down syndrome city. And so it's just like, that's what that means. And we called her back and said, you didn't mention Down syndrome at all. She's like, because it's not, I can't say, I don't know, it's not 100%, it could like be correlated.
Your pregnancy's not far enough along to like,
this is all we're saying is that this is an indicator, it could be an indicator for some things, or it could just go away on its own. I said, okay. So I held out hope for it could go away on its own, but of course I was still so fucking scared. So with that news, it was hard for me to even celebrate the pregnancy, just because I was so scared. But we did, I think after that time, I was like, allowed myself to like buy some clothes and kind of talk about it, just hoping and praying for the best that it would just go away, or that it was nothing, or if it was cardiac issues, or, you know, whatever, who knows. And so then we go for an early anatomy scan at 16 weeks, and they find out a little bit more. So Florence had a cystic hygroma, which is like a buildup of fluid, like from the top of her head all the way down to her little feet. And it's just a buildup of fluid because her lymphatic system is not processing the fluid. So I think it's like a bubble around her that's not supposed to be there. That's not like amniotic fluid. Mm-hmm. And we got our genetic testing back and everything came back good. So
she didn't have Down syndrome.
Didn't have whatever the NPO, whatever's in that. Testing, which is just like standard stuff. So everything came back negative. And so that's when we were able to breathe. That's when I was like buying clothes and stuff. And then the anatomy scan showed more. They sat us down and said, this looks like any one of these, you know, it could be Down syndrome. So that's where it gets a little tricky, in that I would call Joe in, I'd phone a friend, because this is trauma at its finest, where I'm not hearing anything correctly. Not only am I not hearing it, but I'm not hearing it correctly. Like, there's stuff that was said that Joe would say to me after the appointment that I didn't hear at all. Like, I'm only hearing like these things I want to hear of what she's saying. It was wild. So we did know that there were issues, and that if we wanted to know for sure, we had to do an amniocentesis, where they go in and test your baby and just like get blood from, or get fluid to be able to test for sure. And that was our next move. And so I went back. They said, we want to see you back at 17 weeks and we can do that. But either way, we're going to look. We're going to check her out beforehand to see if anything changes. Because with the cystic hygroma, which is that fluid, because she's not regulating that fluid, the fluid can get in her lungs or any of her little organs that are developing, and fluid in any of those organs obviously would result in death at some point. So My dad passes away on March 20th. I go in for that 17-week appointment, which was the week after that anatomy scan where we found out all this stuff about the fluid and stuff. So it was 2 days after dad passes, I go in. And they said I was going to do my amniocentesis, but I actually said, hey, I'm not really sure I want to do that. Could we just look at her? Could we just see what's going on? And there was fluid in her lungs at the ultrasound. And so that was inevitable that that would continue. And there's nothing that they could do. And that, you know, she would just fill up with fluid and she couldn't be able to regulate that. And then her heart would stop at some point. So that was, I don't even have the words. I don't have the words for that feeling. I was just grateful that my technician left the room.
Yeah.
And what happened after was I don't even know how to describe the feeling, because it was like my dad and this was, even though this felt inevitable, I don't know. It was all too hard to process at the time, but it just felt earth shattering. Like, it just felt, this is the worst thing that's ever happened and is ever going to happen. And I don't have any hope for anything. Like, it just felt fucking terrible. So we talked to the doctor afterwards, and we have to make the decision to terminate the pregnancy, even though her future is inevitable that she would pass at some point. So this is where it gets tricky and interesting and infuriating. So you have to make that decision. I choose to terminate the pregnancy. And the doctor was super cool. And he said, I support this decision for you guys. And the writing's on the walls here. Like, this is only a matter of time. And I was really confused by that, because I was thinking, hey, do some people wait this out? Like, is there any hope for this? You know, and, you know, he's like, some people, you know, it's a complete decision, but you have to make that decision to end it. So it's still your decision. And I'm like, okay, but I don't feel like it's a decision at all, you know? So it was really confusing. So, yeah. So after that, I was planning my procedure to end the pregnancy. At the same time, I was planning my dad's funeral, which got really tricky because no one performs that procedure that far along in pregnancy. And because we live in Ohio, it's frowned upon. And not many doctors feel comfortable with all of the new abortion laws. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to Pennsylvania to get my procedure, which was a 2-day ordeal. And at the same time, while I'm trying to book this and find someone who would not only, first off, insurance is not going to cover it. We figured that out because we were going to go to Cleveland Clinic, which was the recommendation through the doctor I was going to. And they said, yeah, pay like $40,000 and we'll do it. And I said, okay, goodbye. And so I'm talking to my genetic counselor at the time, who's the person who's kind of helping us through this whole process find places who would do it. So they're like, she's like, okay, Ohio State is an option. There's always Planned Parenthood. There's UPMC, which is in Pittsburgh. And I'm like, why would I need to travel for this? All that seemed so wild at the time. And then it got really tricky, because now I'm 18 weeks, I'm approaching viability, and past viability, no one's going to perform the procedure and I'm going to have to deliver.
Yeah, no.
And that was not an option for me. So
I would say mostly anyone. Like, the thing that like enrages me about this is like the whole like insurance situation and everything is like, well, just wait and grow your child until viability. Oh, grow my child for 2 to 3 more months until you can induce me. And I have to go through a delivery of a child that I like, whose heart is probably already stopped.
Right.
Like, it, brings in a whole bunch of things.
Right.
And I was at my 6-week post delivery when you're in Pittsburgh for your procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And I am talking to my OB and I said,
was it Stacy?
No, it was Dr. K.
Oh.
What the fuck is going on? Why did my friend have to cross state lines? And he brought in this whole different perspective of not only the new abortion bans, but he said, this man is 55 years old. He said, I've never done a second trimester abortion because they are so rare. Mm. And they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's a serious medical procedure. Things can go wrong. Your uterus can rupture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a specialty. Like, it's a specialty.
Yeah.
And so the idea that a certain, you know, agenda is being pushed, that people are aborting babies just left, right, center, it's fucking difficult. And it always has been difficult. That's what he assured me. He's like, it's always been pretty difficult to get to find someone who is qualified.
Right.
The added issue with the abortion bans is insurance now has a reason not to cover the procedures at all. Like, you know, oh, yeah. I mean, but I'm telling you, Jess, I would go into $40,000 of medical debt. I would have. If that was my only option, or carrying a child that I knew was not going to live, no. No. And I told my doctor, I said, and they'd be doing a C-section. Okay? Put me the fuck out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If you have the strength, and I mean this, if you have the strength and you know that you're carrying a child that is not alive, and you go through labor and you do it, I'm very, very proud of you that you made that choice.
Yeah.
That's your choice.
Yeah.
That's your fucking choice.
Yeah.
And don't ever, ever, ever try to take away mine or take away the fact that, like, that decision is any less of a decision that a mother is making.
Right.
Because that is – it's unreal. Like, just what you had to go through is – unreal.
It was unreal because I was totally at my wit's end at that point, because I felt, even like the person who was like, here's Cleveland Clinic, and I thought it was just going to be this, okay, cool, they're helping me make the appointment. Once I found out that that was like not attainable, it was like, okay, it got a little scarier, where she's like, okay, here's some other options that you have. And so then she stopped like helping me, so now I'm calling. Mm-hmm. I'm explaining my situation and I'm feeling like I have to justify myself, which was so fucking annoying that I'm like, hey, can we help you out? You know, hey, like, hi, my name's Jessica. I need to call you about terminating my pregnancy. Like, I'm wanting to do it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah.
What do you want from us? They're calling, right? I'm a patient and I have to explain this, you know, that it's like, I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to feel like I am going through back doors. I really did, because I was so scared, because UPMC was like right, which is where I went in Pittsburgh, right on the cusp. I was like, really, because they couldn't get me in scheduling wise, I'm like, I'm pushing viability. I'm actually getting really scared. So I ended up calling Planned Parenthood, which is not, I love Planned Parenthood, but I was like, I would prefer a hospital setting for this procedure. Although I know Planned Parenthood does this procedure and they're great, but I wanted hospital versus clinic just for this mm-hmm. specific procedure. That was just my personal choice. So I actually called Planned Parenthood as a backup, because I didn't know UPMC could get me in. And that's so fucking scary that I'm like calling around to end my fucking pregnancy. What the fuck is that? And then my sisters and everyone's like, I don't want to bug you, but like church is asking about, and it wasn't in a way that they really weren't
right, but it was reality.
That was the reality, is that like, hey, when is that scheduled for? So that they didn't want to ask or push, but I had to figure something out, because we had already pushed my dad's service back for this procedure.
Yeah.
So we traveled to Pittsburgh and they were great. I have nothing but wonderful things to say about UPMC.
Women's Health Center.
McGee's Women's Center, Health Center. It was, for as shitty of a situation it was, they were so compassionate, so great. I felt very well taken care of. But I don't know if we go into the details, but it was fucking terrible. I had dilators put in my cervix to open my cervix up.
Is that the most painful thing?
I cannot wait to fucking labor this baby in my stomach to tell you exactly which was worse.
Because
it's my cervix opening, but yeah. I don't have the pressure of the baby and like just natural body shit happening. I have artificial seaweed, weird ass. It's made out of seaweed. It's like these sticks in my cervix to open and widen it up and soften it up.
No. They put a Foley balloon. I talked about that. And that's like something they put into your cervix.
Yeah.
And they like blow it up. And then the thought is your body will
accept.
But my body was like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
No, no, no. That they, and this, I just don't understand why in the year 2023, we are still like belittling the pain that women go through.
Just lidocaine. Just lidocaine.
They told me. They told me it was like light period cramps.
That same.
And I said, I looked at them in the face. I said, I had a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. This feels like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is not light period cramps.
This is my organs are internally bleeding cramps. Mm-hmm. Like, no.
Yeah.
Fuck no. Like,
and they said, here's
granted, IV. If I was actually in labor, it would have been fine. But I was trying to get in labor and I cannot hate Foley balloons more for my situation. That was fucking medieval.
Yeah.
And so that was like, I had that. I was worried about that. I mean, like, is this what she's doing all fucking night?
Yes.
And what do they say? Yes. Take some ibuprofen.
And I say, if anybody ever has to do this or has to undergo that procedure, please ask for pain meds.
Yeah.
The baby is gone. Is going to be gone or is already gone. At that time, I didn't know. But, you know, that.
So her heart had stopped.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
No.
Okay.
I could have looked on the. But I don't know if it would be there. I didn't even look. They said, don't look. They said, this paperwork in your chart is not something you're going to look at. Not that there's photos, but they're like. The vocab, you know, everything is just not something you want to.
It's bad.
So, yeah, so it was dilators. You sit with those. And then I went, I think, like, woke up at 4 a.m. I was luckily, like, one of the first surgeries in. So I was like,
thank God.
I know. I was running. Literally, our hotel was conveniently perfectly across the street. And we just, like, walked. I was running. I was like, I cannot get to this procedure fast enough. But then when I got up there, I was like having a full on panic attack. It was like the hospital setting was really triggering. Just like obviously just being in hospitals with my dad. And I was so uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable because of my, you know, obviously the dilators are still doing their thing.
But I think no matter where you stand politically, if you've been pro-life, you're pro-choice your entire life, it is the hardest decision to make. And you're always, I mean, you had the thing of like how I felt about my ectopic pregnancy. You know, you still feel like I got a board of health care. So, you know, like I have to explain myself my entire life that I had to have abortive procedures. And I, you know, like you just feel this internalized,
like you have to justify it, that it's like, that it's not just your choice and that that's enough.
Right.
And I don't know. Even if you do have that choice to make, that's still rightfully yours and still 100% okay.
Yeah.
You know, even if it, like in my situation, still a little, was my choice, but still felt out of my hands. Like I felt my choice was very clearly made. Mm-hmm. The fact that it still was very much societally my choice and like how everyone perceived it that way in the in the medical field was just pretty isolating.
Yeah
and fucking tragic, man. It sucks so bad. It really was.
But there's no, I mean, again, everybody can make their own decisions when it would come to this situation, and you can try to put yourself in Jess's shoes and say, I would do this, or I wouldn't have done this, or I would have asked these questions. But I'm telling you, like, I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have wanted to terminate the pregnancy as soon as possible. And Florence was a person to you. She was a person with a future and a name and a bedroom. Like, this was not something that you were like.
And that whole aspect of my dad in Florence.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Like, this part I'll just lose it at. But, like, my dad was using her name. My dad was talking about her. My dad would usually tear up when he would talk about her because he knows he's not going to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really hard. But, like, for that sake, you know what I mean? Like, he bought her crib, mm-hmm. and he wanted to make sure that he had gotten her something. And his necklace that he wore in his entire life. I mean, it's something I remember as a kid that he wore. It's Florence's. He said, I want this to go to Florence. And it's so weird. I selfishly wanted it. Like, for me, like, I want that necklace so bad. Like, when your dad's dying, you start to claim things. it's just natural. Okay. But so when he said that, it just, she was a person and she felt very real to me. She is very real, you know, and that was really hard. It wasn't just, I don't know. It was fucking terrible. Like, really, that's the best way to put it. There's no good way that would have ended up. So
my question in this is, and we kind of touched on it, was like, even though Florence didn't make it, are you happy that you had the moments of telling your dad, I'm pregnant, and having those conversations about you being a mother? Like, are you glad it all happened? Not exactly like how it turned out, but like, did you feel peace? I know that like when your dad got sick, that's really when you and Joe started trying to get pregnant.
Right.
And I remember at the time being like, are you sure you guys are ready? I remember you guys wanting to like move and do, you know, like all these different things. And I was like, it's the right time. And
right.
You did not give a fuck.
Yeah.
You said, I don't care.
Yeah. My dad's dying and I need to have a baby.
Yeah.
And this part makes me really sad in this pregnancy, but I am so, so, so grateful that I was pregnant with Florence, that I was carrying Florence during that time, because there are so many things that my dad had said to me or about, you know, about Florence that I like take with me in this pregnancy. Like, mm-hmm. I was finally, I think I like popped a little bit and I was like wearing this skirt that really showed it. And I just like will never forget like how he commented. He's like, Jess, you are beautiful. He's like, what is that? You know, like touching my belly. And yeah, it's stuff that I am reminded in this pregnancy that he's not here for, which is really hard. But there it is. Like, this is what's getting me. And I think it's just, this is grief. This is life without dad. And that's the hardest part, is like this new shit that's going on and like this pregnancy. And there it is.
Yeah.
It just, I think that's been the hardest part. On top of everything else, grief just is shitty. And it's so funny that we had an episode on grief years ago, and boy, did I not understand it then.
No.
Like I do now. And yeah, it's just, there have been milestones in this pregnancy that have felt so joyous and so awesome. And it's so hard when I'm sharing the news with people and there's like one less text or one less call.
Yeah.
And that's always the hardest. And it's like, I know he knows. People are like, yeah, but he knows and he's a part of it. And I'm like, boy, do I know that.
But like, I miss him.
But my human experience, I don't get to share that with him.
Yeah.
And that's.
And you don't have to like find beauty in him watching over you all the time.
Yeah. I do sometimes, but not always, you know, because I'm this part of me is like, no, I want to share this with him. Like, this baby will be here and it'll be a human that he doesn't know, you know?
And so, I mean, this doesn't compare at all, but my like intrusive thought my entire life was that my dad wouldn't meet my kids, because he talks about dying all the time. And it was this constant reminder of, like, he's old and it's inevitable. And from the fear I've felt with just the thought of it and, like, watching you go through it.
Like, live your fear.
Oh, when I tell you, like, I didn't have many breakdowns postpartum at all. Like, I really, there was the breastfeeding thing, which was really one time where I was just mourning the fact that it wasn't going to happen. And then it was this. And it was just like the anger. And also just knowing that, like, I knew your urgency and your feeling. And, like, when you were like, I have to get pregnant, I was like, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Like, I know it. I know the fear and the – and I feel like your relationship with your dad and mine are similar in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. in that, you know, like, you got closer as you got older, and they're different people with different skills, but, like, still, like, private, stoic, strong, smart men.
Yeah.
And –
that, like, love to provide.
Yes.
Like, I figure your dad, yeah, same in way. The same way. Just love to be helpful, love, yeah, to be useful and provide for his kids in a really, yeah, prideful way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, like, a big reason why, like, I loved bringing Eric around him for a long time, mm-hmm, was, just like, to see seeing, that. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure, like, you know, you got to see through, you know, Kristen's boys. And,
yeah, but I'm, like, envious of it, yeah, when of I course. Think about it. Yeah. Sometimes, not in, like, a nasty way, but just is like, damn, that she's so lucky to have that.
Yeah,
like, so, that, like,
yeah, exactly.
And although my dad never would have met Florence if she did make it Earthside, but I am really grateful for those moments I did have with him talking about a baby, mm-hmm,
the conversations you wouldn't have necessarily had.
100% the crib, for instance, yeah, which is like, I don't even know if I could say the sentence without crying, but he said, you know, yeah, that's too much. Is when you put her down, just know that I'm always holding her. That fucking sentence. So we put together the crib. And I lost it. There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put the crib, wasn't super emotional when I saw it, but I put the mattress, and my mom got us the mattress, and I put a crib sheet on, and I put a little stuffed animal in there. Literally, Rick was downstairs. Literally. I don't know why. I was just like, oh, let me just put this in. Didn't think anything of it. Like, the crib's been up. So, and then when it was, like, all complete, I just, like, that was it. I fucking lost it. My, like, God damn it. But that's so funny that that's grief.
Yeah.
Like, although, like, yes, that object represents my dad. He wanted it too, and it does. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, grief is so funny like that, that it just, you think that you're just doing something, casually putting, yeah, something together, and, you know, it wasn't going to be an emotional moment. Like, sometimes you know when things are going to be, and then when they're not, they're so unexpected. And, like, yeah, that's that phrase, like, grief is a sneaky bitch, like, that's what, yeah, it means. It's always like that. Like, I had COVID what was that, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever,
yeah, longer,
was miserable. I put on one of his flannels, no idea that it would still smell like him. It did. Boom, boom, instant. I'm on the ground. I hit the ground, hit the deck.
And you could still smell.
Yeah.
With COVID.
I know, believe it or not. Just shit like that, you know, is just, it's never ending. And part of me is grateful for that, that it still feels that hurtful and that strong. Mm-hmm. Like, I never want that to go away. Like, I never want to get used to a life without him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's...
I know.
It's tricky.
Like Joe had said, when you guys were in the room, when you knew that Florence was gone, that he said that your dad just had to get there first. And I know that, like, you and I both have not necessarily, like, struggled with our faith, but just, like, you don't know what you believe until you know something is true.
Yes.
And I, yes, know that your dad and Florence are together. I know that, like, if there is, you know, a lot of joy that is to be had, I'm sure, in the next phase of whatever, you know, death brings, like, I can imagine how happy your dad was to have a Cartelloni girl with him that he gets to, like, raise and, like, be with.
I didn't even think of it that way, but that is, like, one of the most comforting things I've actually ever heard about it. Because I think when I think of it, I think of, like, my dad being like, oh, shit, you know, like, fuck, that happened to her, because he had no idea. So the thing about that was my dad had no clue
that you were
that
having...
anything was wrong at all. So although that happened very quickly, too, you know, obviously it was like 16 weeks and then 18. So and that was right when he passed. So. Yeah, but I love to think that version of it.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes I'm like, my dad's just like, fuck, I can't believe that happened to her.
Yeah.
You know, but now I'm like, that he's grateful to be up there with her, you know?
Yeah.
It's so weird when you think about that, because, like, you think about just, like, a baby, but no, it's a soul.
Yeah,
it's, you know, a soul. It's a,
yeah, for sure.
I think that's so cool to think about.
When I
And I, like, felt who, what kind of person she was.
Yeah. I think that is... You know, because we've talked about, like, you know, your this your daughter now is different, feels different. Like, I don't think everybody has to have this, like, inclination or, you know, I don't know, feeling. But, like, I knew what Elsie was like.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm sure
she
not
got
many people
older.
Feel that. But it's so – I'm grateful that I have that, you know, because I feel like some people can't connect or there's some people struggle with that. But – I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's so you – so was it accurate to meeting her? Like
– Yeah. But I also very much felt, like, soul-wise that Elsie was the ectopic pregnancy as well.
That's crazy.
I very – like – and I think that's why, like, I can relate to, like, the pregnancy anxiety and all of that. But I didn't feel loss, like – a lot of people, I think, feel lost because.
Because you've got her back.
I mean, I didn't have a cycle. We got pregnant without trying, with actively not trying. She just wanted to be here and was like, really sorry about implanting in your fallopian tube.
I went to the wrong spot.
Yeah, but we're going to, you know, roll it back, retry, you know, get there. But that's what I mean. Like, you really don't know what you believe until you've, like, feel it. And when I was a Christian, was big into church, and something that comforted me about death then, which, like, I don't know how I feel now, is, like, because people would always say, like, when you die, aren't you going to be sad that you're not with your people, like, the people that made you happy? And my answer back then was, when you go to heaven, when you go to, you know, the next life, you have the perspective that you don't as a human. Like, you have...
All human shit, you're rid of human worry.
Right.
Or any type of anxiety you had here, I feel like just, you're rid of that.
And so, like, you have a perspective, you know, without the human experience. Right. Like... Everything is going to be okay. You know, I don't know. That's what I would tell myself back then. And I feel like I also, like, really strongly believe in reincarnation and, like, the souls are recyclable.
So whatever happens, happens.
I heard a perspective
on that that's crazy. That, like, there are old souls, but they're still being new souls made.
Yeah.
And then so who told me that more, like, calm people or less anxious or are old souls or, like, reincarnated. And
you,
like,
just have one conversation, like, with Madison's son, Eric, and you're going to say, you are not new here.
Oh, really?
That boy is old.
But some people are, like, you know, really anxious worriers. They're new. Mm-hmm. But maybe they're, like, 2 to 3 years in, you know, or one.
Cycles.
Yeah. You know, I just think that's so funny. Like, the how many lives you've lived.
Yeah.
You could just tell by your, you know.
Your demeanor.
Demeanor and, you know, calmness and, you know, wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird to think about. I did go down a 2-week, maybe 3-week deep dive of mediums. And if you
I remember this, yeah.
have any questions about the other side, go down that rabbit hole. It's fucking, it provided me with so much comfort.
Did you mean it with Medium?
No.
Okay.
I still want to, though.
Okay.
But I was in a craze, though. Like, I was watching that that celebrity one. It was on Netflix. It was great. I was crying every episode. But it's, like, so spot on. Yeah. I just, I really believe, I started to, like, really believe.
I was a big fan of Teresa Caputo's.
Dude, still am, okay? When those TikToks pop up, I'm watching every single one. It's immediate ball sesh for me. Because it just is, like, wow, that you can get in touch with people like that. But can't rely on it.
Would be terrifying. If you are a medium or have the witchy ability, I'd be scared.
Yeah, that is...
The way that they describe it, imagine being a child growing up like that.
I just think it's really cool how they have to translate. So things aren't, that's the thing. Because if it was like a really clear message, and sometimes it is, it's because, I just think it's really cool. So the way that past loved ones communicate is in like symbols. I guess it depends on like different mediums of how they're going to connect. And it's up to the medium to decipher. Which means I have to think like they're really smart, or there's like communication couldn't be that direct between the worlds or between the dimensions, you know? Yeah. So that's what makes it believable to me that I'm like, no, there is questioning and deciphering going on, because if they could just say words or read minds, it wouldn't be that easy. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's so rad. I was really down the rabbit hole, and I might go back because it kind of sounds nice.
I think Jerry like used to like treat herself every year.
Yeah, Jerry's pretty witchy, though.
Jerry
predicted this pregnancy.
Yeah, she's witchy.
Yeah, and when I found out it was a girl when we did our gender reveal privately with just Joe and I said, fucking Jerry, man.
Jess said, what do you think it is? And I said, I got to go with Jerry on this one. Mm-hmm. I got to go with the witch.
Yeah.
It's a girl.
Yeah, Jerry predicted it was a girl. And she predicted...
But she had, like, dreams about it.
Predicted that there was, like, anxiety about...
Yeah.
It beforehand, and that there was like a really tense doctor's appointment awaiting news, which was very much what was happening. So being the news, like this one was good, I guess, was healthy, good or bad. I guess something to note about Florence is that she had trisomy 22,
terminal.
Yeah. Which is later we found out after. Yeah. The procedure. So no wonder why it didn't pop up on the genetic testing.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Very rare, yeah.
And Down syndrome is trisomy 21, right?
Correct.
So is it extra 2 chromosomes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's just a notable.
Yeah. In most pregnancies, you know, when you have a miscarriage, if they have a huge genetic, you know, abnormality like that, your body rids of it. And sometimes it doesn't. That's why Down syndrome children are, you know, like miracles, because it's rare that they survive.
Yeah. And that was like my one takeaway, if I had any at that time. It was really hard for me to see any silver linings. But I was mad about like, why didn't my body just get rid of it? This is like so much stress and unnecessary shit, you know, but obviously, I had the chance to like understand Florence and carry her for the time that I did. But my body, I had to be grateful that it would carry a pregnancy that wasn't supposed to for that long. So it made me, for the longest time, I had a nasty relationship with that about my body post procedure. And then not believing that the bleeding would stop or that I would get pregnant again. Just couldn't believe it for some reason. Just stuck in a dark hole.
You couldn't help.
No, not 1 ounce of it in me. I was just like, this world has absolutely fucked me.
Yeah.
Bad. Like it was, I don't know. And it was hard. I think it was hard for some of my family members to understand because nobody's ever seen me in that dark a place before. I wouldn't get off the couch. There were times where, you know, I was saying stuff like, I don't want to move. I don't want to do anything. I was sobbing and saying the words like, I just feel super hopeless.
Yeah.
And I remember Britt looking at me with a face that I've never seen her make. You know, she just didn't know how to help me because I'm usually the one, you know, helping or being strong, or I'm always going to make a joke about something, or I'm going to be, which I did a lot of, you know, dad's cancer. I was cracking jokes to and from the hospital. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just the way I get through. But after that, it was really hard. I think I did ask the doctor. I said, you didn't take my uterus out, did you? I'm like, what?
Well, they gave you, I don't know why, but they did not give you like super jumbo pads. So you're just bleeding like you would. Like I bled, I bled like crazy after my ectopic pregnancy, which was 7 or 8 weeks.
They gave me the shot.
They gave me, I got the same pads that I got when I gave birth after my ectopic. So I don't know why they were giving you the light days.
Yeah, why?
Because you're just bleeding through it.
And that was scary.
Like, that wouldn't handle a period. So what the fuck are we doing here?
That's
my one bad note about UBMC. I'm like, why would they not give you, like, a literal diaper?
Yeah, but they did give me the shot to contract my uterus down.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Good.
And so.
It's good. It's holding. She's doing good.
Yeah.
Little buggy. Okay, one more question
based
on this, and then maybe we'll take a break and do some more fun catch-up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we kind of talked about this, but in what ways has this affected your sisterhood?
Mm.
What were the most challenging parts and the times that you felt the most close?
That's such a good question. Ooh, I didn't expect to be emotional about it, but I have never felt closer to my sisters during this whole experience. True definition of you just rally up and really get through together. Especially during like the worst parts of it too. Like we all just helped each other out. There was a time Britt was living with dad and that was really challenging for her. She was full on caretaker when we really didn't know what to expect. And we would just check in with each other, like switch out. It felt very much like Belfair, you know, like really similar to that about being such good teammates through this.
Belfair was the autism school that they worked at.
Yeah. Oh, Mike hit. Sorry, Rach. But some challenging parts is experiencing this very differently. And not only experiencing the 6 months differently, also grieving differently. That's challenging. And in the way that I feel bad for my sisters who aren't experiencing it the way I am, or like are struggling, you know, with seeing things in a positive light, you know, just like relationships that they had with dad and, you know, trying to, you know, patch that up after must be really difficult.
Yeah.
And we all had really different relationships with dad. And that's why things are different now, you know, why we grieve him differently. And so that's challenging, but not in the way that it like separates us or, you know, brings us apart. But I don't know. It's things are different. Post-traumatic stress. Really, though, like I hate to sound so dramatic about it, but it's like I'm different. Life's different. My sisterhood is different in the best way, though.
I do feel like a big reason, you know, why you didn't feel comfortable talking about it was because of how it affected Kristen and Britt as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been taking a very serious special interest in birth order. But I do feel like as the youngest sister, you did not feel like it was your place to talk about the experience for the family when you were in it. I really felt like that was why, like you, because it, everything was, I mean, we've touched on like probably 60% of what was going on, but there's a large 40% of just like craziness in there of like mess and like other family stuff that's going like.
Yeah.
It was a crazy time. It was like, just like we're hitting the big 2 points, dad and daughter gone. Yeah. But
there was a whole other, there's a whole other mess in there that was like.
And all of you just processing probably differently. And I think you were just, because you always
it was
think about how others are going to feel, you were like, I don't have the energy to think about what I'm saying as I'm saying it and thinking about how it's going to affect Kristen, thinking about how it's going to affect Britt, thinking about what I'm saying and how that, you know, like you didn't want to say something at that point when things were still so up in the air.
Right. Also, I don't even know if I would have either until we had like a sister's get together where we were like talking about some tying loose ends, but also just like, we reminisced for 4 hours about how what everything went down.
Yeah.
And I think like after that, now I feel like I can tell it so that like we were all on the same page, but on different pages. But like we all experienced a lot of that the same, but also different. I don't know. But I think that was like the green light for me to be like, OK, I can talk about this publicly. But there was something else I was going to say about that. Now I can't remember. Fucking pregnancy brain.
It's bad. Real.
Mine is bad and it's so irritating.
It's really real.
It was, I don't know if it was something about sisters or not, but shit.
All right.
I could rope in my mom in that too, but
that's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. A good thing.
I was like, that's the tea. That's the tea sipping. Okay. Well, thank you for talking. That was a diggity dog and doozy.
That was so good, though.
It was good.
Felt like we touched on everything.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, holler at your girl. If I miss something.
Yeah. We'll close this episode out. It's probably very long. But before Jess leaves, we're going to do... I reached out to you guys to see any like impromptu Q&A, so maybe we'll touch on
that'd be a part
where I've been. Yeah, so well, part two. Hey, we're mothers now, so we gotta compile things. Two episodes at once. One comes out, and hopefully I remember to press record.
Yeah, but we'll get better.
The thing that I looked at Jess. Like death had become me. And I said, I do this for a living. I press record for a fucking living.
And I said, my dad said, quit fucking talking about me. He didn't want that shit recorded. Too bad.
Too bad. Too bad. Our story now. Jess's story now.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All love right, guys.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for sticking around.
Thanks for listening to my deepest, darkest traumas. Hope you enjoyed it. Be here all week. This is For Better and Worse Podcast. I'm Jess.
I'm Rach.
And we're out.